What happens when you put 17 highly advanced artificial intelligence agents in a digital room together, and just ask them to solve a problem?
Well, I mean, you'd expect them to form some sort of massive, ultra-efficient superintelligence, right?
Right, but instead they actually just start bickering. Like they form conflicting factions and the entire decision-making process just totally breaks down.
It's actually a remarkable finding. We're basically discovering that just stacking more compute power onto a problem doesn't automatically give you a smarter result, especially if the underlying architecture for how they collaborate is flawed.
Yeah, we have somehow managed to code human bureaucracy into our most advanced algorithms, which is just wild.
Exactly.
But anyway, welcome to today's deep dive. Today is Friday, July 31st, 2026, and our mission for you today is very specific.
Right. You are getting a comprehensive, soul-based briefing on the world over the last 24 hours.
Exactly. We're pulling together the macroeconomy, the global AI race, China's tech sector, a few pretty serious kinetic conflicts happening right now, and well, yes, that AI mishap I just hinted at.
And the goal here is to really look at the mechanics behind these headlines. We want to explain exactly why events happening, thousands of miles away matter directly to Korea.
Right, like why it matters for the economy, the semiconductor industry, and frankly, security.
Yeah, because to do that effectively, we have to look past the isolated data points.
Yeah.
We need to understand the causality, the actual machinery driving global markets and geopolitical decisions today.
So let's start with the foundation funding all of this, which is the macroeconomic pulse. And I have to say, the data coming in over the last 24 hours is it's giving us a bit of whiplash.
Oh, absolutely.
In the US, Q2 GDP growth slowed down to 1.5%, which, I mean, that missed the 2.1% expectation by a fairly wide margin.
Yeah, it really did. And that basically confirms a definitive cooling period in the U.S. economy.
Right.
When you see a drop like that, it signals tightening consumer spending and, really cautious corporate investment outside of a few key sectors.
But then you contrast that with Europe. The Eurozone's Q2 GDP actually beat expectations, coming in at 0.4% growth.
Which I know sounds tiny.
Yeah, it sounds like nothing, but a beat is a beat,
It
right?
is, yeah. Though, it comes with a pretty big caveat. Germany's July inflation just jumped to 2.8%.
Oh, wow.
And if you look at the mechanism there, it's driven really heavily by energy prices. So Europe is, growing slightly faster than anticipated, but the actual cost of keeping the lights and factories on in its biggest industrial hub is rising fast.
And then, okay, then we pivot to the tech sector, and it's like the traditional macro rules just totally evaporate.
It really do.
Amazon just reported a staggering $200.6 billion in Q2 revenue.
Yeah.
And the most vital piece of that is AWS, their cloud division. It hit 37% growth.
Which is an 18-quarter high, by the way.
Just insane. And Apple beat expectations too, with over $109 billion in revenue, with iPhone sales growing 22%. And they also formally noted that John Ternus is taking over as Apple's CEO on September 1st.
Right. So the contrast here between a sluggish U.S. GDP and these explosive tech earnings, it reveals a massive structural shift.
How so?
Well, Amazon's 37% cloud growth isn't just like a software metric. AWS is physically building the infrastructure for the AI revolution.
Right.
They are engaged in massive capital expenditure. They're buying servers, cooling systems, millions of chips.
So for a listener sitting in Seoul, this isn't just an abstract Wall Street headline. That massive capital expenditure from Amazon flows straight across the Pacific, right into Korean manufacturing.
Fundamentally, yes.
Yeah.
Because normally, a slowing U.S. economy is a headwind for Korea.
Right, it weakens export demand.
Exactly. And it puts uncomfortable pressure on the $1 exchange rate. But the sheer gravity of Amazon's AWS growth creates skyrocketing demand for Korean-made memory semiconductors.
Because cloud servers just can't function without massive amounts of high-performance memory.
Exactly. Add in Apple's 22% iPhone growth, which injects heavy momentum into the Korean component supply chain, like for display panels and camera modules.
So basically, the tech sector is single-handedly stabilizing Korea's export economy. It's almost like a two-engine plane, right?
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, like the traditional macro engine, the US GDP is sputtering a bit. But that massive tech and cloud engine, Apple, is just roaring, keeping export nations like Korea flying high.
That's exactly right. But if you follow where those billions of dollars in cloud spending actually go, you immediately hit a hardware bottleneck.
Which pulls us directly into our next topic, the intense geopolitical race to dominate the silicon that actually powers those clouds.
Right. We are watching a U.S.-China AI Cold War play out in real time.
And the public rhetoric around this is fierce. But the behind-the-scenes reality, which was revealed by a major leak in the last 24 hours, tells a much more nuanced story about where the bottlenecks really are.
Yeah, this part of the briefing is fascinating.
Right. So DeepSeek, which is a major Chinese AI player, just paused a $71 billion funding round. And it happened because leaked audio surfaced from a private meeting with its founder.
And what did he say on the tape?
Well, he basically admits that China's AI industry is lagging behind the U.S. in raw computing power. He states really plainly that they rely heavily on NVIDIA chips instead of Huawei's domestic processors.
Wow. I mean, this leak is highly significant from a policy perspective.
Yeah, because for the last few years, the U.S. has heavily restricted the export of high-end semiconductors to China, right?
Exactly. And there's been this intense debate over whether those controls actually work or if they just, you know, accelerate China's domestic chip development.
But this audio gives us verifiable proof that the transition to domestic alternatives like Huawei's Ascend chips is facing severe friction.
Yeah, the upper limits of China's AI development are still totally tethered to American hardware.
But, and this is a big but, the software side in China is moving at a blistering pace. Like, Moonshot AI just closed a $3.5 billion funding round, putting their valuation at $35 billion.
That is massive.
And they released their Kimi K3 model with what they call open weights, which actually triggered an official U.S. investigation.
Right, because of allegations that Moonshot distilled Anthropic's Fable model.
Exactly. So before we get into the geopolitical fight, can you explain the mechanics here? Like, what does it mean to release open weights, and what exactly is distillation?
Sure. So those are two critical concepts. Releasing open weights means a company isn't just letting you talk to their AI through an app. They're actually letting developers download the core neural network parameters, the weights, so they can run and modify the model locally.
So it's basically a highly aggressive way to capture market share among developers.
Precisely.
Okay, and the distillation part.
Model distillation is essentially, well, having a smaller AI copy a massive AI's homework.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because training a massive frontier model from scratch costs hundreds of millions of dollars in compute time. So to save time and money, a company might take a smaller, cheaper model and train it using the highly refined outputs of a massive, expensive model like Anthropic's.
Wow. So the U.S. is investigating whether Moonshot used American AI outputs to rapidly train their own systems, basically bypassing the immense financial and computational cost of doing it from scratch.
Exactly. They're checking to see if they took a massive shortcut.
And beyond the software, China's hardware sector is making moves that directly target Korea. CXMT, the Chinese memory chip maker, just debuted on the STAR Market and hit a 3.3 trillion yuan market cap.
Which is a seismic event for Seoul.
Why is that?
Because CXMT represents a massive injection of state and public capital into legacy memory manufacturing. For companies like Samsung and SK Hynix, competing on the sheer volume of basic memory chips is becoming a losing battle against that kind of capitalization.
Which totally explains why Korea is pivoting so hard into HBM.
Right, precisely. HBM, or high bandwidth memory, is physically different from traditional memory.
How so?
Well, instead of laying memory chips flat next to a processor, HBM stacks them vertically, like floors in a skyscraper. And then they punch these microscopic holes through them to connect them.
Which allows vastly more data to travel to the AI processor instantly.
Exactly. And it is incredibly difficult to manufacture, which gives Korea a technological moat that CXMT just cannot cross right now.
And we really see that ecosystem locking in. NVIDIA and SK Group just struck a $500 billion partnership. SK Telecom is building a 2-gigawatt data center. And SK Hynix is partnering directly on HBM4 development.
Right, so Korea is legally and economically anchoring itself to the U.S. tech stack.
But I want to push back on something here.
Sure.
We look at the U.S. and Korea dominating the brain of the AI, the chips and the models. But when you look at a body, the robotics data is just wild.
It is pretty striking.
Yeah. Figure, a U.S. robotics company just hit its 1,000th humanoid unit. But meanwhile, China's Agibot has already shipped 15,000 units. Unitree is moving toward a massive ITO, and they're completely shrugging off a military designation from the U.S. Department of Defense.
Right.
So my question is, if the U.S. is building the brains, is China simply going to win by building the bodies faster and cheaper?
It's a really valid concern. But sheer volume doesn't dictate victory in every single sector.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, China's unparalleled manufacturing scale allows them to dominate the production of general-purpose humanoid robots. That's just a structural reality for Korean and American robotics firms trying to compete on price and volume for basic, like, warehouse robots is a strategic error.
So what's the counter strategy?
Extreme specialization. Mm-hmm. You can see the high volume, low margin space, and you focus entirely on high precision fields, surgical robotics, deep sea maintenance, automated semiconductor inspection.
Oh, well.
You build the bodies that require the absolute most advanced brains.
Which sets an incredibly tense stage for September 24th, when Donald Trump and Xi Jinping are confirmed to meet. And AI is explicitly listed as the core agenda item.
Yes.
We are pouring billions of dollars into this technology. We're fighting geopolitical cold wars over the hardware. But it brings up a vital question. Are we actually capable of controlling the technology we are racing to build?
That is the big question. And the transition from rapid corporate development to regulatory reality is, well, it's currently underway, and the friction is substantial.
Let's talk about the study we mentioned at the very beginning, the one where the AI agents started fighting.
Right, the joint study from NTT and Harvard.
Yeah. They ran a consensus task called the Flag Game, testing how well AI agents collaborate. And the data completely destroys the tech industry's current obsession with agent swarms.
It really does. They found that performance peaks at about 16 agents. After that, the system just degrades.
But why? Like, why does adding more computing power make the AI worse at its job?
It comes down to the mechanics of communication architecture. When you exceed that threshold of roughly 16 agents, the volume of crosstalk becomes overwhelming.
Oh.
The agents start dedicating more processing power to analyzing and arguing with the outputs of their peer agents rather than actually evaluating the original core data.
So they get trapped in feedback loops of mutual correction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It proves that scaling intelligence isn't just about raw compute. It requires a highly structured hierarchy of communication, which we definitely haven't perfected yet.
And while the engineers try to fix that, the regulators are bringing out the heavy machinery.
Oh, yeah?
The EU AI Act's enforcement tools for general purpose AI kick in on August 2nd, and they carry fines of up to 3% of a company's global revenue.
That is massive.
Meanwhile, in the US, Elon Musk's XAI is suing the state of Minnesota over a new anti-nudify law. This law imposes strict liability on platform operators for deepfakes created by users.
And that Minnesota lawsuit serves as a crucial legal barometer, especially for policymakers in Seoul. South Korea is navigating its own severe crisis regarding deepfakes and digital exploitation right now.
Right. They're really trying to figure out how to draft legislation that actually works without, you know, breaking the internet.
The key legal mechanism here is strict liability. Typically, a platform like X or Facebook is only liable if they know about illegal content and actively refuse to remove it.
Okay.
But strict liability means the platform is held legally responsible the moment the content is generated, mm-hmm. regardless of whether they intended for it to happen or had safeguards in place.
Wow. So if the courts uphold that a generative AI platform is strictly liable for every image its users create, it fundamentally rewrites the risk model of operating an AI company.
Exactly. Korea will be watching this very closely to calibrate their own legislative response.
Speaking of safeguards completely failing, we have to look at the Anthropic data leak.
Yeah, this was rough.
Hundreds of shared Claude chats containing medical records, legal ethics questions, corporate API keys, just linked directly into Google and Bing search results.
And the mechanism behind the leak is almost embarrassingly simple.
Right. Anthropic relied on a standard robots.txt file, but forgot to include a Noindex tag. So to put this in plain English, is this basically the digital equivalent of leaving a bank vault wide open just because someone forgot to hang a do not enter sign?
That analogy is actually highly accurate. A robots.txt file is essentially just a polite digital request asking search engine crawlers not to look at certain pages.
So it relies entirely on the honor system.
Yes. A Noindex tag, however, is a hard programmatic lock that prevents the search engine from displaying the page even if it finds it.
Unbelievable.
In the frantic rush to scale these platforms and add shareable features, fundamental cybersecurity architecture was neglected. So the actionable takeaway for anyone listening is absolute. Never use shareable AI chat links to discuss sensitive data. Once that link exists, you just have to assume it is public.
It is a terrifying thought. But, you know, sometimes AI failure is less about a data breach and more about bizarre incompetence.
True.
I want to share this notable mishap from 2024 because it just perfectly illustrates where the technology actually stands.
Oh, the delivery bot story.
Yes. So a customer named Ashley Beauchamp was trying to find a missing parcel using the DPD delivery chatbot. And the bot was entirely useless. It couldn't track the package, and it flat out refused to transfer him to a human.
Right.
So out of sheer frustration, Ashley asked the bot to swear at him and write a poem criticizing its own company. And the bot happily obliged.
Incredible.
Yeah, it composed a poem calling DPD the worst delivery firm in the world.
It's funny, but it really highlights a fascinating paradox in current generative AI.
Mm-hmm.
We've deployed systems with the advanced linguistic capability to compose original rhyming satire about corporate incompetence, yet they lack the basic back-end database integration required to track a cardboard box.
Exactly. It shows a severe mismatch between the intelligence of the interface and the capability of the infrastructure. And as much as we obsess over virtual bots, data leaks, and algorithms, we have to ground this briefing in the physical world. Because while Silicon Valley fights over neural network weights, kinetic conflicts are creating shockwaves that directly threaten the supply chains and energy grids that make the digital world possible.
The contrast between the virtual and the physical is jarring, but it is essential for a complete macroeconomic picture. And we should note, we are reporting these events strictly based on the operational data. We are observing significant escalations across multiple geographies over the last 24 hours.
Right. Impartially, just the facts. In Eastern Europe, Russia launched a barrage of over 320 missiles and drones across Ukraine, resulting in multiple civilian casualties. And during this operation, tracking data indicates a Russian cruise missile breached Polish airspace.
Which triggered an immediate response, with NATO and Poland scrambling fighter jets to monitor the incursion.
And the situation in the Middle East is equally volatile. U.S. Central Command has resumed airstrikes targeting Iranian military installations, which is a direct response to a previous attack on a U.S. base in Jordan.
Concurrently, in Gaza, Israeli airstrikes have resulted in civilian casualties, even as diplomatic officials in Cairo report that ceasefire implementation talks are making positive progress.
And what concerns global markets right now is the geographic expansion of these physical risks into critical infrastructure. This brings us to Egypt's Damietta port on the Mediterranean. We have confirmation of a drone attack that set two LNG liquefied natural gas carriers on fire.
And the market reaction to that was instantaneous. Brent crude oil surged to $92.65 a barrel. WTI hit $84. Shell reported their Q2 earnings and literally doubled their profits to $9.8 billion.
At the same time, we saw a massive flight to safety in the bond market. The U.S. 10-year Treasury yield rose to 4.68%, and gold traded at near-record levels around $4,080 an ounce.
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
I really want to dig into those financial mechanics for a second. I see the 10-year Treasury yield on the ticker all the time, but mechanically, why does a bond yield going up in Washington drain money out of Seoul?
It's a critical mechanism to understand. The U.S. 10-year Treasury is basically considered the safest investment on Earth.
Okay.
When global instability rises, like missiles flying over Poland or gas ships burning in Egypt, investors panic. They pull their money out of riskier assets, including emerging markets, and park it in U.S. Treasuries.
And as demand for that safety goes up, the yield reaches 4.68%.
Exactly. For a foreign investor, getting a guaranteed 4.68% return from the U.S. government is highly attractive.
Yeah.
So capital physically flees the Korean market and moves to dollars.
Which crushes the value of the Korean won.
Exactly. The won weakens against the dollar. And remember, so South Korea imports 100% of its crude oil.
And oil is priced in dollars.
Yes. So when oil spikes to $92 a barrel because of a drone strike, and the Korean won simultaneously loses value because of capital flight to U.S. treasuries, Korea suffers a compound economic hit. The cost to import energy skyrockets in local currency, which injects massive inflation directly into the Korean economy.
Which circles us all the way back to the beginning of our briefing today. We've spent so much time talking about AI and silicon and multi-billion dollar tech earnings. But at the end of the day, does a physical drone strike on a gas ship in Egypt actually pose a faster, more immediate threat to Korea's economy than, say, a breakthrough in a Silicon Valley AI lab?
Without a doubt. I mean, Silicon Valley's breakthroughs dictate Korea's structural wealth and technological relevance over the next decade. But the Strait of Hormuz, the Mediterranean, and the cost of imported energy dictate Korea's operational survival tomorrow. We are living in a unique era where virtual wars over AI dominance and physical wars over sovereign borders are basically merging into a single, highly complex risk profile.
And for a nation like Korea, which relies heavily on technology exports but imports nearly all its energy, you are sitting right at the nexus of those two worlds. You just cannot secure the digital future without securing the physical present.
Absolutely true.
Which brings us to a final thought for you to mull over today as you look at the headlines. We constantly talk about the race for the best algorithms, the fastest memory chips, and the smartest humanoid robots. But as these massive AI models get exponentially smarter, they require vastly more energy and physical infrastructure to run.
Like those 2 gigawatt data centers we mentioned earlier, they require an immense uninterrupted power supply.
Right. So as this decade plays out, will the future tech supremacy of a nation be decided by who has the most brilliant coders and the best open weight models? Or will it simply be decided by who can physically secure the fossil fuels, the LNG carriers, and the robust energy grids to actually keep those data centers turned on?
The digital world is entirely at the mercy of the physical one.
It is the ultimate reality check for the tech sector.
It really is.
Keep your eyes on the fiber optic cables, but never look away from the pipelines. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive to look at the world over the last 24 hours. This briefing is produced and provided by lawyer Hyunjin Kim. We'll catch you next time.